This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. This week is Banned Book Week, a time to reflect on the works of literature that have been censored in the past. The school board in Randolph County got a jump on the festivities. Last week, they banned the novel Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison. The novel was published in 1952 and examines the social and political challenges facing African-American men. Randolph County School Board decided to take it off high school library shelves after a parent objected to the language in the book and its sexual content. Now, the Board of Education says it will take another look at that ban on Wednesday. In the meantime, we thought we'd talk about the larger questions raised by the story, particularly since this is, in fact, Banned Book Week. Sheila Smith McCoy joins us. She's director of African American Culture Center at North Carolina State University. Sheila, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Also joining us, Susan Brown, director of the Chapel Hill Public Library. Susan, welcome.
Thank you.
Sheila, what do you think? What did you think when you heard about what was happening in Randolph County?
I wish I could say I was greatly surprised, but in the context of what's happening around our state and in our nation about sort of dampening down access, I wasn't really surprised. But it is troubling that the book was banned.
It does have, though, I mean, it's talking about putting it on shelves for high schools. There are some graphic depictions in there, some disturbing ideas about sex in particular. Do parents have a right to say, look, I understand it's a challenging and good work, but my kids aren't ready for this kind of stuff yet?
Well, I think parents do have a right to be active in their students' educations, but based on the criteria that this book was banned for, the Bible would be a banned book in Randolph County schools. So part of what you have to think about is what value the book does have for contemporary readers. When you think about the issues that Ellison was raising in his book, he's raising issues that are of import to this generation as well. And if we continue to sort of turn our heads away from issues related to race and sex and how these things are intertwined, and indeed the difficulties that we as a nation, as a state, are facing because we tend to look away from issues of race, we aren't going to move beyond this point. So when you think about the banning of the book in the context of moving beyond where we are now in race relations, particularly in a county like Randolph County with the demographics that it does have, and in a state like our state where we're on the news an awful lot from issues relating to limiting access, it really does become troubling for what we might think would happen for this next generation. We have to have these difficult conversations.
Susan, at the Chapel Hill Public Library, we have to have these difficult conversations. This is why, in many cases, people write books to provoke these sorts of conversations. What responsibility do you have as a librarian to think about the sensibilities of the people who are going to come in and read those books? Because of the content, because of the way in which that message might have been conveyed. How do you balance those things?
Well, I think what Sheila, the word that she mentioned was access. And that's what really libraries are all about. We provide the access. And as a parent, you know, do I want my kids to read stuff that might be upsetting? No, but that doesn't mean that that information shouldn't be out there, right? So I think that we do balance that we provide the access, and then those conversations we can help start and also let parents and children have those individual conversations.
Tell us more, Sheila, about that book itself, written in 1952, the kinds of issues it raised, because there were some very important political issues that were particular to the time, and then I think some universal themes as well. Tell us about the book.
I think you're right, and I think one of the things that Ellison talks about when he talks about this book is trying to get to those universal themes in terms of a real American story, the story of the American Negro, which was the term that was used in the book at the time. It opens with a prologue that sort of brings together an awful lot of issues related to race, and Ellison himself was a trumpeter. And so the book has a jazz reflection about all these different resonances, if you will, about issues relating to race. He focuses on Hollywood, on violence, on how people misperceive African Americans because they refuse to see them. So in a very interesting way, the Invisible Man's banning seeks to make him even more invisible. But thankfully, in the digital world, people might have an opportunity to see that the book is banned and find it anyway.
Right. I mean, it's interesting to think about what it means to ban a book in the digital age. But in terms of the themes, too. Ralph Ellison gave an interview in 1966, and he talked about the genesis of that book, what led him to write Invisible Man. Let's listen to what he said.
I had been reading Lord Raglan's The Hero and thinking about the question of the mythological leader and how historical figures take on his attributes as they become prominent. And I was thinking about the fact that Negro leaders at that time seldom really led Negroes, but were usually dependent upon the largesse of white supporters, that they had no particular way in affecting their will.
There we go. Ralph Ellison talking about the genesis of his book, Invisible Man. That's an interview in 1966. The book was published in 52. I mean, there are some very important themes there that for children born, you know, in the post-civil rights era to understand that the civil rights movement didn't, you know, sort of come out whole cloth, that it evolved in a context like that.
And yes, certainly, and continues to evolve. If we think about the context now for what's happening as we push towards 2040, where it's estimated that whites will be in the racial minority in this country. And so I think a lot of issues relating to limiting access to books, to ideas, to themes, to voting rights have to do with that push so that the power will continue to be differentiated as it is now. But Ellison's focus on communism, on the fact that communism did not necessarily address the issues relating to race in the United States, are an important part of the conversation of any student of American history.
Right. And to understand that that was at one point a legitimate alternative. It had been pretty much delegitimized by the end of World War II. And once we knew what Stalin was doing in this country, all of that, if you're a high school student today, is a pretty important themes to understand in terms of figuring out the context today and what kind of debates we're having today. So, Susan, tell us what the library is doing to bring attention to Banned Books Week.
Sure, I would love to. So Banned Books Week is a national, I hate to say celebration, because then people say, you shouldn't celebrate banned books. It's a national campaign that happens every year, sponsored by library groups, publishers, and bookstores to highlight all of these issues of the dangers of censorship and limiting access. So at Chapel Hill Public Library, we are celebrating it in a fun way. This is actually a project that I did in Lawrence, Kansas last year and brought it with me to Chapel Hill. They're called Banned Books Trading Cards. And what we did was we asked local artists, which is a group that often also has intellectual freedom challenges, to create works of art that were in some way based on a banned book or author. We had 48 entries, which are currently all of them on display in the library's lobby. And then we chose 7 of them. We had a jury to be printed as trading cards. So that's what you're all holding in your hand right now. So they are 7 cards that on the front have some beautiful art, and on the back are kind of a riff on trading cards, where they have facts about the book and the author and why it's been banned.
I know why the caged bird sings.
Don't cage books, Frank.
Don't cage books. Sam, my head is right there. I'm already deeply into the celebration. Reason for banning has had 39 public challenges since 1983. Most of the complaints from parents who objected to the book's depiction of sexually explicit scenes, including rape molestation suffered by the author as an 8-year-old. How many places was this banned, does it say? Several, but challenges, a number of them. And again, this is an original drawing on the front.
Correct. Right? These are all local artists from the Triangle area. And it's interesting with the Caged Bird Sings one. I was thinking about the Randolph County case, because if you read the mother's complaint, she talks about being outraged by the scenes of incest and rape. And to me, I'm like, you should be outraged by those. That's why we read these books and we get this message out, is to sort of hopefully react to these things. So to me, the same reason that she wants it limited is the same way that I want more access to it.
Exactly. If you think about, one of the cards is for Charlotte's Web, which has been banned. And I was shocked and amazed to see that. I learned something new today. But so many books written by women, written by writers of color, whether they're African-American, Native American, or whatever, are books that are being challenged and banned because they offer a different narrative from the dominant one. And so we really have to think about celebrating these banned books because of that.
Well, of course, Charlotte's Web was written by E.B. White, but the challenge... Here's the thing. I was shocked, too. There's a good thing about doing this show. There's always something that you just didn't know. Charlotte's Web was banned, and the challenge because of talking animals deemed blasphemous and unnatural. Spiders defying. So talking animals. This creates a problem for the Bible and Balaam's ass, sadly.
Indeed.
Whose speech was important to the whole narrative arc.
I agree, and pretty much to 90% of any children's library collection anywhere.
Bugs Atheist Bunny. But this does raise a question, even the idea that blasphemous should be a cause for censorship. It's like whose religion gets to censor the material, right?
Right, and those are the kinds of conversations that we hope that these cards start. You know, we don't have all the answers, but the fact that people can see these and be surprised and start talking about these issues is really the point of the cards.
And just to make this distinction again, we talk about banning a book or censoring a book. You know, the way Ulysses was banned and censored in the United States, you wouldn't be published here. That is different than a school board saying this book can be published and it can be read by children, but we're not going to put it on our shelves. I mean, there is at least a distinction to be made there, would you say?
Yes, and I think banned books is just a sexier term than challenged books. Often that's the other term is challenge. So some kind of a challenge is raised. But yeah, it's really rare that books are truly banned in this country anymore.
Right. But I mean, to prohibit publication, you know, is one thing. And to say that you may not publish in this country or be sold in distribution. I don't actually know how the ban. Do you know how the censorship on a book like Ulysses worked? Was it at the point of publishing or sale? In any event, it was far different than saying that book. It really restricted the availability of the book to the general public versus a school board. But talk about some of these other themes and why it does seem that there is no celebration of greed that can be banned, is greed being considered a vice in many, many religions. So Atlas Shrugged, the scenes of graphic greed depicted in that book don't seem to bother people as much as scenes of graphic sex, another vice that you might talk about. And it is interesting what we consider an acceptable vice that you can write about in detail and celebrate and glorify greed. But we can't – and, of course – the sexual scenes in Invisible Man are not at all glorifications, as you said. Mm-hmm. They're meant to shock us and terrify us.
They're meant to shock, and many times they're really not that dramatic. Now, a couple of the scenes are dramatic, but many of them, if you think about it, was published in 1952, are much tamer than what students might be watching on TV and certainly experiencing in their video gaming culture. So probably what we want to think about in terms of education, what is the point of education? Is it to limit ideas or is it to provide access to greater access to ideas? So that's one of the things that I would, not that Randolph County is listening, but I would want them to think about whether the book can push beyond the boundaries of sort of this tunnel vision of having one way of looking at the world.
And I'll add to that some of the artists. So each of these artists included a personal statement with their piece, and parts of which are on the cards. But two of them in particular, I just thought of with that because they talk about their personal experience often as youth reading these books. So one book is based on The Chocolate War, which is a classic teen novel. And the artist talks about how she felt like the author finally felt she was responsible enough to read about issues of bullying and all of this stuff. And the same with the Toni Morrison card for The Bluest Eye. The artist is an African-American woman who talked about, you know, she felt exactly as the character did in this book. And so it's that experience in the frame of education, but also the experience as a personal education and personal experience.
Well, and again, it gets back to who's doing the censoring and whether they have shared that experience. So what might be exotic to them and other is in fact very personal to and so if you're going to decide on books, making sure you have the most diverse panel to look at whether the book should be on our shelf might be important.
Exactly. America has a number of narratives. And if we're going to think about America as we'd like to conceive of it, you have to have these strains, you have to have these conversations, and we have to be able to look at this very important book. One of the things I'd like to bring up is that one of the reasons they said it was banned is because it had absolutely no literary value. Well, it was voted one of the most important 100 books of the 20th century. So part of what you want to think about is, you know, who's deciding what has literary value in addition to what the context of that was in terms of how this banning relates to anything given to how it relates to anything about race and racial difference.
Well, it also leads to the question sort of how prepared are teachers and administrators to have that conversation Do they understand the deep context of this book and when it was written and how that can contribute to a conversation? Because if they don't, if they're not prepared to teach other than anything other than timelines, this book is challenging and kind of threatening.
And that's an interesting thing to bring up. Actually, one of our cards, again, is based on The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison. And right now in Ohio, at the state level, the State Board of Education is trying to remove that from the Common Core standards for the state. And again, that goes to teachers being able and they're, you know, being able to teach these issues and also being expected to teach them on a certain level. It's a very similar types of challenges to the book or issues with the book as with Invisible Man, that it's pornographic and all of that. But I think that the point you raise is our teachers, these are important issues. Are teachers ready to teach them?
Yeah. And if we're going to have mandatory, syllabi and teaching to the test, make sure that people can understand these kinds of context before they get out of school. So, but it does raise this other question that you pointed to earlier, which is, does it make any sense to censor anything in the digital age, or do we just promote it? Does this mean all those high school students in Randolph County are burning the Google to get it?
Say the best way to get a high school student to want to read something is to ban it. Right?
Exactly. And Nelson has a very important line in this book. I won't get it exactly right, but he says, but who knows, but on the lower frequencies, I also speak for you. Even in the book, he was trying to speak to how this becomes a narrative for America looking at herself in particular ways, and that there should be room for a variety of voices in that context.
He was also very articulate in that same interview about the what he saw was the absence of literary critique of the American scene, that there were these manners books about how particular people lived, but nobody chose to take on this big question of what does it mean to be American in such a pluralistic society. Again, all questions that you could raise with high school students studying this era if you chose to teach the book. And talk more, Susan, about the idea that you've asked graphic artists to participate in this and the fact that they are also often the victims of censorship themselves.
Yes. So all of the artists that were involved with the project, many of them kind of spoke to that. So A, they were delighted with the idea, but they really felt like they were sort of sisters and brothers with writers in this issue. So what's great about, I think, this too with the artist is we chose a variety of styles of art. And people's reaction to the cards is really interesting because when they first get them, they're sort of delighted by the object. And then they react to the art. And then they're just outraged when they read the back of it. And then they're kind of sad. So the artists have been great. But what's been really great is seeing people's reaction to them.
Who are some of these artists?
So on the back, you can see the Charlotte's Web card, which was yesterday, is a Chapel Hill artist named Clay Carmichael. She does a lot of book illustration, pardon me. Today's card is by an artist named Mike Benson, and it's a very different card. So hers is a beautiful watercolor, and his is very graphic, kind of pop art sort of a thing. There's pen and ink, there's collage, there's all kinds of things.
You can see these at our website, stateofthings.org, and you can't see them all because we will reveal them one at a time as you are doing. So you're going to have to go back every day to see the latest card. Well, very briefly, Sheila, tell us what NC State is doing to recognize this week.
Well, students coming to the African American Cultural Center will have an opportunity to think about banned books. We'll have a display ongoing all week for this week, so looking forward to seeing their reactions to it.
Thank you both for being on the program. Sheila Smith McCoy is the director of the African American Cultural Center at North Carolina State University. Susan Brown is the director of the Chapel Hill Public Library. To learn more about Banned Book Week and the program at Chapel Hill Public Library, you can go to our site, wunc.org. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can also see images of some of these banned book trading cards, as I said, on our website, and we will be updating them as they are revealed. More of the State of Things just ahead. Please stay tuned.